Surely one person who should know something about St. Benedict and understand his message is the abbot of a 1,300-year-old monastery. Abbot Edmund Power is the abbot of St. Paul's Outside the Walls in Rome, a Benedictine monastery founded in the early 700s on the burial site of St. Paul himself. Today, the work of the Apostle of the Gentiles continues as the monks serve the many thousands of pilgrims who visit the Basilica each year. Abbot Edmund speaks of the Benedictine presence at St. Paul's.
We normally reckon that the first Benedictine community was clearly established there by the year 720 AD under Pope Gregory II, who was a monk and had obviously taken his name from Gregory I, the first monk to become pope. So, yeah, we've been there a very long time. Benedict himself died 540, normally reckoned, so, yes, it's under 200 years after his death.
He continued to talk about St. Benedict.
Well, we don't know an awful lot about him, except that there are two main documents that transmit his spirit. One is his rule, obviously, which he wrote himself and has had a huge influence on Western, well, not only spirituality but culture. The other is the life of Benedict, written by Pope Gregory the Great, who, interestingly, was born probably in the year that Benedict died, 540, who in his Dialogues, Book 2, wrote the life of Benedict. It's embellished a little bit and it's got scriptural elements brought in. It's a hagiography, in other words, a theological work based on the saint's life, but probably its historical basis is reasonably sound. So on those two documents we can derive a picture of the sort of person Benedict was. He was born in Norcia, that's the modern name of the Italian town in Umbria, in the mountains there. It was called Nursia in the Roman period. It's a Roman city. It's still surrounded by the Roman wall. He was born there, so he'd be the child of a late Roman family, obviously formed in the Roman culture, although the Roman Christianized culture. From there, he went to Rome, where he studied for a while, then to Subiaco, which is now known as one of the places closely associated with him, and finally to Monte Cassino, where he died about the year 540.
Benedict had a twin sister, Scholastica, who also became a saint. She seems to have been quite a character.
According to the tradition, she was his twin sister. We know nothing about her, really, except what Gregory the Great says in the life of Benedict, and he says very little. But what he does say shows her in a very good light and Benedict in a slightly less good light. The story's probably fairly well known. She obviously followed Benedict with an interest in the monastic way, and apparently when he established his monastery, she established close by a monastery of nuns, sisters, and they would meet periodically. He was rather strict, it seems, but one day he'd gone down with a couple of his monks to talk to his sister, and they talked during the day about the spiritual life. She was very happy. Evening came, he said, "I've got to go now." She said, "Oh no, please stay, let's continue talking, it's so wonderful talking about these things." He said, "Sister, what are you asking? How can I go against my own rule?" No, more or less. So she just closes her eyes, purses her lips, well, Gregory doesn't say that, but I can imagine it, and prays. And then an enormous storm breaks out. The rain pours down. Benedict looks out and says, "What have you done, sister? May God forgive you," and has to stay all night talking about the spiritual life. And she says, "Well, you didn't ask me, you wouldn't listen to me when I asked you, but God has listened to me." And so that's all we know about her. But the next thing, she dies very shortly afterwards. I don't know if there was a direct connection, but she dies, and then her soul is seen ascending to heaven in the form of a dove.
The names of Benedict and Scholastica have always been associated throughout the history of Western monasticism.
But she's in a way a symbolic figure, you know, a figure closely associated with Benedict in the beginnings of Benedictine monasticism, but also she's seen as the kind of patron saint or the founding mother of Benedictine sisters and nuns. And So the tradition, they go together, and which is nice, really, because it proves that the Benedictine rule is not male-orientated or female-orientated. It presents a monastic spirituality accessible to all, in fact.
Benedict and Scholastica were even buried together.
Benedict, it seems, had prepared a tomb for himself, and his sister died first. And according to the tradition, they're both buried at Monte Cassino in the Basilica. There is a tradition that the body of Benedict was taken to France to the monastery of Saint-Benoît-sur-Loire, but there's been conflict for a long while between French and Italian monks over exactly where St. Benedict is. Personally, out of loyalty, I live in Rome now, I tend to favour the Italian version.
Although Benedict is known as the father of Western monasticism, he was not the first monk. However, he did bring a whole new impetus to monasticism in the West. Abbot Edmund explains.
Yeah, the monastic movement, if you can call it that, began way back. I mean, the earliest roots, you could say, are in the apostolic community described in the Acts of the Apostles, where the believers held all things in common and prayed together and so on. But then, by maybe the 4th century, just when the empire was beginning to tolerate Christianity, at the time of the Emperor Constantine, the beginning of the 4th century, when the martyr spirit was no longer possible in a way, I mean, Christians had shown their love of Christ by shedding their blood, when the first emperor became Christian or favoured Christianity, and that was no longer a realistic possibility, the monastic movement seemed to have come to life at that time. Some say that it was an alternative form of martyrdom. In other words, taking yourselves away from the social context of life, the city life, the ordered life, into the desert to seek God was the new spiritual heroism. And that movement became very popular, especially in the East, in Egypt, in Palestine, in places that were dry and it was possible to live out of doors. But it also spread to the West, and the first monk of the West is often considered to be Saint Martin of Tours, who also became a bishop in France later. And they were all before Benedict.
Abbot Edmund describes Benedict's special gift to the monastic way of life.
So Benedict, in fact, is born into a world in which there is monasticism, different forms of monasticism, different rules, let's say, different ways of doing things. His genius was to bring together a number of currents in a particular rule that is livable, practical, and moderate. Because there are other monastic rules earlier than Benedict, some of which he uses, some of which have influenced him, but very often they're not livable, they're too extreme or excessive in certain ways, and it was he who pulled together the most livable currents and then presented his rule, which because of its effectiveness became the predominant rule in Western Europe.
Benedict put monasticism within the grasp of those who wanted to live a monastic life, but who were not called to an asceticism that was sometimes extreme.
Benedict doesn't have, for example, a very excessive sense of asceticism. Asceticism means, the difficulties you voluntarily take on as part of your spiritual combat. You know, the image of warfare, spiritual warfare, is a strong image in the spiritual tradition. You hear, for example, of monks in the Celtic parts of the British Isles, you know, way back, who would spend all night long in the sea up to their necks in the winter, you know, great athletes of the spiritual life. But, I mean, none of us do that nowadays. It's difficult to see how that would lead you closer to God, but maybe it would.
Benedict showed that to be close to God, it wasn't necessary to be a hermit. People can find God through living in community and as a result of working together in service of the God who calls us.
the basic living together in community requires is an ascetical experience. You know, the overcoming of your selfishness in the service of others, the being regular at the prayer, regular at the service, getting up very early for the meditation on the Word of God. These are all elements of a more moderate sort of asceticism, a more livable asceticism. And I think that's something that people found they could respond to. We are